Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the August 18th, 2022 Hearings Officer Meeting of the TRPA. This is a hybrid meeting, both in person and online. My name is Andrew Strain, and I'll be serving as the Hearings Officer today. Please bear with us as we have some construction noise intermittently occurring as the building is under, a roof replacement this afternoon, and so that may affect the quality of the ability to hear. Just let us know if it does. We'll be happy to repeat or speak louder. I'll call the meeting to order now. Moving on to item two, I'll ask the staff if we have any changes to the agenda as it's been presented. Seeing none, I'll approve the agenda as it's been presented. Number three is the public interest comments, and these are for no action. Any member of the public who wishes to address the hearings officer on any agenda item that's not listed as the announcement of appeal rights or as a public hearing item or on any other issue may do so at this time. However, public comment on the announcement of appeal right items or on public hearing items will be taken up at the time that those agenda items are heard. Please note that the hearings officer is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing any issues raised by the public that are not listed on this agenda. Georgina, will you please look for a show of hands for anyone who'd like to provide public interest comments?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature in the Zoom app. The hand icon is located on the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you and you'll have 3 minutes. Just looking for a show of hands. Looks like we have no hands raised, so we can continue with the agenda.
Thank you, Georgina. We'll move on to item four, which is the announcement of appeal rights. I want to let everyone listening or here today know that any decision of the hearings officer is appealable to the governing board within 21 days of the hearings officer decision. The application fee and the appeal application can be found on the TRPA's website. Item five are the public hearing items. We have four today. We'll begin with item 5A, the Justin and Sally Smith Land Capability Challenge, located at 150 Talmont Circle in Placer County, California. The assessor's parcel number is 083-300-029, and the TRPA file number is LCAP2022-0252. Julie Roll is our staff planner on this item. Julie, will you please begin?
Yes, this is Julie Roll. As Andrew mentioned, this is a land capability challenge, and the staff recommendation is to change the land capability to classes 1B, 4, and 6. And just a minor clarification on that, on the staff report, under the second paragraph staff recommendation, it mentions that it's changing the land capability from class 5 to 1B, 4, and 6. And I just want to clarify that class 5 is how it was originally mapped in the original Bailey maps, but it was actually verified as class 1B, 3, and 5. So it's technically changing from 1B, 3, and 5 to 1B, 4, and 6. So that doesn't change anything that we're looking at, but I just wanted to clarify that. Have not received any public comment on this item. And this project was reviewed by Phil Scholes on behalf of TRPA. He's our outsourced soil scientist, and he's on the line so he can give any more details on the project.
Thank you, Julie. Phil, can you please give us a brief summary of what you found in the field?
Yes. Can you hear me all right?
Very clear. Yes.
Perfect. So we've got a residential lot that slopes down from Talmont Circle to the east, and it's got two different slope classes, more or less split, upper and lower. And we did a soil pit down in sort of the lower part of the property, but very close to where the boundary is between the two different slope classes. I dug a pit at that location and found that the soils were deep, although not as deep as we see in some parts of the basin. We did hit bedrock at about 45 inches on this location. and found that in that upper 45 inches, there weren't any root restrictions and there was no evidence of a water table. So it is a deep soil from a land capability point of view, and where it wasn't matching any of the map soils or other soils that are mapped in that vicinity. We concluded that it was an unnamed soil type, and therefore we label those as a triple X type soil, and concluded that for slopes 0 to 16, it's class 6, and for slopes 16 to 30, it is class 4. And then on this particular site, there's a small drainage that pretty much hugs the north property line that qualifies as an SEZ, so that was mapped out in addition to those other two soil types, and that is a class 1B. So it gets a, only 1% coverage, whereas class 6 gets a 30% coverage and class 4 gets 20% coverage.
Very good. Thank you, Phil. I've read your report and also the summary that's in the staff report itself and don't have any further questions. And Julie's clarified what we have to file in terms of land capability map units. At this point, I don't have any further questions for staff or for our consultant. I'll open a public hearing and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for anyone who would like to address the hearings officer on this item.
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so at this time by using the hand icon at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you. Looks like we do not have any hands raised for this item.
Very good. I'll close the public hearing. And before any further steps, I want to ask if we have anyone representing the applicant here today. Sounds like no. All right. Or me.
Who's the applicant?
I think it was Abby Edwards.
Ms. Edwards, are you on the line this afternoon?
I traded some emails with her on a different project yesterday, and she didn't mention this, so I have a feeling she forgot to attend.
All right, very good. Thank you, Phil. We don't have any further input from the applicant. We've held a public hearing. I have closed the public hearing, and now I will take action on the project. Based on the information that's contained in our staff report, including the technical soil study prepared by our consultant and the supporting mapping work, and further based on the conclusions and the rationale on which they are based, I will approve the Smith Land Capability Challenge as it's been presented. Let's move on to item 5B, the Deep Blue Trust Land Capability Challenge, located at 751 Champaign Road in Washoe County, Nevada. The assessor's parcel number is 126-262-09, and the TRPA file number is LCAP2021-0420. Julie Roll is also our staff planner on this. Julie, can you please introduce this item?
Sure. This is Julie again. As Andrew mentioned, this is another land capability challenge. The staff recommendation for this one is to change the land capability from classes 1A and 3 to 1A, 4, and 6. And our soils consultant, Marcelle Monarchy, worked on this project, and she's on the line with us today to give a more in-depth review. But before she does that, I wanted to mention one comment we did receive by phone on this. Not necessarily on the project itself, but just on the staff report and the notice that, you know, was sent out to the property owners. And the comment was just that the staff report is very hard to read for a layperson. It's very technical with all the soils information. And it's hard for a property owner to really understand, you know, what's the point. So, and then also the notice, the same thing, wasn't very clear what we're actually reviewing. So we've taken that information and agreed. It is very technical, but we're looking for ways we can, you know, perhaps make this a little more clear on, you know, what the implications of this are, you know, even though we don't necessarily know if the applicant is coming forward with a future project, but just to, you know, give a little more information on that.
Good. Thank you, Julie. Marshall, can you please give us a briefing on what you found based on your field investigation?
Hey, yeah, this is Marshall. Sorry, I don't think I have the computer on mute earlier. So this is out on Incline, and it was mapped originally as UMF and UME, which is UMPA, 15 to 30% slopes and 30 to 50% slopes. I'm sorry, that's what the land capable, the verification resulted in. So we went out to the site, and it is split with the upper parcel is not as steep, and the lower parcel is greater than 30% slopes. The part that was steep, we did not investigate because it wouldn't make a difference. The greater than 30% slopes is still going to be 1A or 1% cover. And there was two pits located on the upper parcel. Both were deeper than 40 inches and so are not the Umpa soil that was mapped. And they are more like the Tahoma soil, the Tahoma Jorge complex, which is mapped in this area in the 2007 soil survey. And they're more like the Tahoma soils because they had less than 35% rock fragments. So technically they're the Tahoma soil rather than the Jorge soil, which are higher capability soils, class 4 and class 6, based on the slopes. There is a couple areas of rock outcrops that were also mapped out on the topo that went to the 1A area. And that's about it.
Thank you, Marshall. And do I understand it correctly that the boundary for the class 1A is not changing?
It did change a little bit, but it's approximately in the same area, but it has like more of an S curve than the challenge went across more like, if you see the original in the photographs, there's the old soil survey kind of followed that line in the,
it looks to be about a 3,000 square foot difference in the 1A. So it got a little bit smaller.
All right. Thank you. Anything else, Marshall?
That's it.
Thank you. Is there someone on the line this afternoon representing the applicant?
Yes, this is Tony Matta with Ogilvy Consulting.
Good afternoon. Any comments or input you'd like to offer?
Just that we've reviewed the staff summary and we agree with the conclusion.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have any further questions for the staff or our soils consultant or for the applicant. At this point, I'll open the public hearing and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands. Anyone who would like to address the hearings officer? Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so by utilizing the hand-raising feature on the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing star 9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you. It looks like we don't have any public comment on this item.
Very good. Thank you, Georgina. Seeing as we have no additional public comment on this item, I'll close the public hearing. And prior to taking action on the land capability challenge, I'm glad that we were able to, recognize that some of these soil studies and some of the terms and the sort of the meanings of these soil classifications aren't necessarily easily understood by everyone who lives or works here in the basin. And I absolutely support and commend the staff for seeing if we can figure out how to somewhat make this more readable and understandable in lay terms, because it's very technical. And there are some soils terms in there that I wouldn't even want to begin to try and pronounce because I'd get them wrong. Okay, based on the information that's contained in our staff report, including the technical soil study that Ms. Municki has prepared for us, and based on the staff's recommendation, the conclusions, and the rationale on which those conclusions are based, I will approve the Deep Blue Trust Land Capability Challenge as it's been presented. Julie, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's move on to item 5C, the Berger New Single Parcel Pier, located at 189 Yellow Jacket Road in Douglas County, Nevada. The assessor's parcel number is 1418-10-801-006. And the TRPA file number is ERSP2022-0046. Our planner on this project is Tiffany Good. Tiffany, I understand, is on the line with us this afternoon. Can you please, Tiffany, give us a summary of this proposal?
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Andrew. Yes, my name is Tiffany Good, planner in the Permitting and Compliance Department here at TRPA. This project is for a new single parcel pier. The property was awarded a new pier allocation in 2021, and as such has submitted the application, and staff has reviewed and recommending approval of the project. The proposed pier is 90 feet long as it extends from the high water mark. It's 10 feet wide at the pier head and includes a boat lift and a catwalk. One existing mooring buoy will be converted to the boat lift. The pier terminus will stop short of lake bottom elevation 6219 and the TRPA pier headline. Those are the two limiting factors for pier length. The visible mass associated with the pier and the pier access stairway will be mitigated using allowable visible area that's associated with the composite contrast rating score of 28 and a lake frontage of 110 feet. So the total visible mass associated with the new pier must be mitigated at a 1-to-2 ratio due to the property being located in an area that's designated as visually modified, and as well as it's also located in a non-attainment area. The project also includes an access stairway that will create 132 square feet of new coverage in the back shore. And as a result, the applicant must transfer in restoration credits at a ratio of 1 to 1.5 in accordance with code section 8554. And I don't know if now's the time, Andrew, but I'll just remind you that I also would like to read into the record a permit condition that addresses new electrical and mechanical that's and the associated grading for the pier.
Yes, please. Go ahead, Tiffany.
Okay, so the condition that would be added reads, on sheet 1 of 3, indicate the locations of any electrical and or mechanical equipment and the associated lines, the proposed grading area, and the amount of cut and fill necessary. Include temporary BMPs where appropriate. And that's it.
Thank you, Tiffany. Yes, you've answered one of my questions, but I'll probably still ask it. We have represented the applicant here.
Gary Taylor.
Good afternoon. Mr. Taylor, thank you for being here. Comments, observations on your part?
Only on the scenic total visible area. Since we're greater than 100 feet, we're 110 feet wide.
Parcel width.
Width at lake. I use the coefficient of 7% more for the allowable visible area. So we came up with a scenic score of 28, which allows 1,800 feet based on a 100-foot parcel on the code. And since we're 110 feet, the actual visible area should be 1,926 based on a 7% increase.
And Andrew, that is correct. So that's the allowable visible area, as I stated, that's associated with the composite contrast rating score of 28 and a lake frontage of 110 square feet. So that in effect gives them more remaining allowable visible mass than was reviewed originally.
Do we need to, Tiffany, make any changes to the scenic quality analysis as part of the staff report or the findings as a result of that?
Yes, we will be changing the you're exactly right. Here in section A, the scenic quality section, instead of 1,800 square feet of allowable, there will be 1,926 square feet allowable. And you will be, And then you will be leaving. I can't quite read what that says. Unfortunately, I don't have my copy up on the screen, but there will be 126 square feet additional allowable remaining allowable visible area associated with the property.
And that is, Tiffany or Gary, the difference between the 1926 and the 1800?
Correct. So that's the bottom of item number one on the special conditions on the draft permit would be 1,001 rather than 875 square feet.
All right, I can follow that level of simple arithmetic. I'm going to trust our staff that they'll be able to make any necessary changes to the permit conditions moving forward. I just have to compliment applicants as well as our staff, because many, many years ago, the scenic quality review was deemed to be quite subjective and a battle of, you know, beauty in the eye of the beholder. And it's come so far, and you all are so literate and fluent now in these sorts of measures to help with the threshold attainment, which is our ultimate goal that I think everyone shares. I just want to acknowledge that this has come a long way, and I think it's been just terrific. And the more you work with it, obviously, the more sophisticated, the more experienced, better information, better decisions come out of it. So thank you. All right. Anything else? That's Gary?
That's it.
Tiffany, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
I was curious, Gary, if you could give us, and I know Tiffany alluded to it as part of her condition in the draft permit that we would amend. How do you get power down to this?
Currently, there's power down at the gazebo at the bottom of the hill.
I've seen the pictures of the gazebo.
Which is kind of just up about 60 feet, 70 feet from the bluff. So there's power right there. There's a 100-amp circuit right there.
That's a lot of power for a gazebo.
Well, the gentleman's a tech guy. So we're going to trench from there over to the pier.
Okay. And I presume that's going to be plenty for the lift. I don't know how much power, lift is operating, how much it draws.
We need 80 amps down on the pier.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes quite a lot to get a boat out of the water.
Correct.
When you're using that. I thought the lighting, if I'm reading the material sheet that was submitted as part of your application, it almost looked like the pier lighting was recessed into.
It's built into the piles.
To the piles. How do you install those piles without?
Well, then you drive the piles and you burn up, and then you burn out the, cut out that four.
Two-step process.
And then when you're building the pier, you run conduit along the pier, and then you sweep it up into the pile.
I like that.
And then they attach it to the pile.
Safety as well as keeping the night sky available to everyone who enjoys that. I think that's clever.
Yeah, you don't try to pre-do it when you drive the piles, because you'll always be wrong.
Right, exactly. Okay, good. And it just looked like, Gary, I haven't been to this site exactly, but I know the character of that shoreline south of Glenbrook Bay and South Point, and saw the pictures that you provided, which were very helpful. That looks like it's going to be a tough site to build in, or it's going to take some time. Let's put it that way.
Quite rocky.
It's quite rocky. Yes.
There'll probably be some drilling and pinning to the rock for the piles.
That's what it looked like.
Instead of
easy driving through 50 feet of sand.
If it was 150 feet to the north, it would have been Sand City.
In the bay.
But it'll be a lot of drilling and pinning.
Thank you, Gary. You've answered my questions. And Tiffany, you mentioned any public comment received to this point?
No.
All right, very good. I don't have any further questions for the staff or for the applicant at this time. I'll open the public hearing and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for anyone who would like to address the hearings officer today. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so at this time by using the hand icon at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you. And we do not have any public comment on this item.
Very good. Thank you, Georgina. Seeing no additional public comment, I'll close the public hearing and take action on the project. A question first for our staff. Tiffany, are we making a finding of no significant environmental effect on this?
Yes.
All right, very good. Thank you. Based on the information that's contained in our staff report, including the required findings, and that includes Chapter 4, Chapter 80, Chapter 83, and I think that is all of the chapters, and the rationale on which those findings are based, and that includes the finding of no significant effect. Also, as Tiffany has recommended, revision to the draft conditions of permit approval to address the extension of utilities and any mechanical systems that are necessary to serve the pier. And based on that, I will approve the single parcel pier for the burger parcel as it's been presented with the draft conditions in the permit as amended. Thank you, Tiffany. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, everyone.
Let's move on then to item 5D. Tunnel Creek Properties LLC, new cellular monopine tower located at 1200 Tunnel Creek Road in Pine Village, Nevada. The assessor's parcel number is 130-311-17. And the TRPA file number is ERSP 2022-0330. And I will note that this item was continued from our August 4th hearings officer meeting. And thank you both to the staff and the applicant for making provisions to continue that item so we could review it more closely. That was very helpful. Thank you. Our staff planner on this item is Paul Nielsen. Paul, can you please give us a summary of what's proposed?
Yeah, so this is a new monopine for a cellular facility. It's 45 feet tall, so it's designed to look like a pine tree, essentially. It's located in Incline Village. It's just east of the intersection of Lakeshore Boulevard and Highway 28, perched up on a hill. It's on a parcel developed with a single-family dwelling. And let's see, the project also includes a small utility equipment shed for the supporting equipment, and also there'll be stairway access to the site. As you mentioned, we did continue the item because we received public comment from a neighbor expressing concern about the scenic impacts of the project, not only from their property. They're situated above the site, back in the trees. And they look out sort of over the site to the lake. But there is some pretty significant screening between the residents and the proposed monopine, which I'll talk a little bit more about. So we continued it. We continued it for 2 weeks from August 4 so that we could work with the applicant to erect a story pole, which is a tool that we use to simulate the height of proposed structures on a property, whether it be a residence or, in this case, a monopine. So last Friday, the applicant erected a story pole with a balloon on top, and myself and Andrew Strain, as you know, observed it from different locations along with the applicant and the property owners who submitted public comment. So we took about an hour to view it from different locations, including from the deck of the residence where the property owners, observe the lake and have a view. So based on that site visit, we confirmed a number of things. We confirmed that the simulations that were prepared for the project, which are attached to the staff summary, simulated the height accurately. We also confirmed that the impact analysis in the staff summary is accurate, that it doesn't need to be changed, that the conclusions drawn based on the simulations showed that there would be no significant impacts to scenic quality from the roadway, from the lake, or from the adjacent property owners. Residents, which relates to the special use findings and neighborhood compatibility findings. We do not believe that this structure will change the character of the area and will not result in the inability of people to enjoy other property, which is a part of the special use finding. However, you know, one thing that the story poll did show is that any increase, future increase in the height of the monopine or the width could result and probably would result in potentially significant effects to the TRP scenic thresholds from the roadway, possibly from the shoreline, and could impact the views of the adjacent property owners who submitted public comment. And so in order to address the public comment and to ensure future impacts do not occur from modifications at the site, staff is recommending an additional condition. And Andrew, I believe you received the memo recommending condition number 22, which states future increases in height and width of the monopine structures prohibited in perpetuity to avoid impacts to TRPC and quality threshold ratings and views from adjacent properties. That condition in the memo includes a typo. That fourth word says high in the memo, and it should say height. So, in regard to additional public comment, we did receive two letters of support, one from the Tahoe Transportation District and one from Washoe County. Each of those letters were expressing support for the project because of the increase in communications, the enhancement to the communication system in the area that would help benefit both public service and public safety related communications that happen on that busy section of the East Shore.
Any other public comment?
You know, not from the public. We did receive one letter that I sent to you, which is a letter from the applicant's attorney that was submitted that addresses concerns raised by the public comment and includes simulations prepared from the viewpoints that we observed last Friday. And sort of outlines a response to the concerns that were raised by the public. So again, no other public comment and no other changes to the staff summary other than the proposed one additional condition are proposed. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Paul. And that condition number 22 that we're looking at on screen right now, that would be added to a permit if it were to be approved.
Correct.
Okay.
To the end of the permit, which would be condition 22.
Thank you. And Paul, are the roadway and shoreline scenic quality units, or the shoreline travel route and the roadway travel route, are these units in attainment presently?
The shoreline unit is not in attainment. And therefore, any project that is proposed in this shoreline unit, even though the scores have increased from the time that we first started documenting scenic quality quantitatively, even though the scores have raised, they have not raised to the point where we can say that the unit is an attainment, that it meets the scenic quality objectives. And so the thresholds themselves, actually, in the threshold resolution states that we need to enhance the scenic quality in those units that are not in attainment. And therefore, staff is recommending that 5 pine trees be installed adjacent to the tower, which will provide 2 benefits to scenic quality. One would be from the roadway, from the shoreline. It will be, as you look up, it will screen a portion of the road cut behind the proposed monopine. And that road cut is identified in the scenic quality improvement program as being problematic, as detracting from scenic quality. And so in order to make the findings that this project will actually result in an improvement to scenic quality, we're recommending the inclusion of those 5 trees. The second benefit will be from the public who walks that stretch of the roadway. As you saw when we were on site, Looking out towards the lake is just a spectacular view. And it's along a fairly long stretch. So this tower and the shed will not detract from that, but the trees will help screen the lower portion of the monopine, utility equipment shed, and also will provide a limited screening because the monopine is really not visible from the adjacent property, but the lower portion of the monopine, the base, will be partially screened by these trees. On the roadway unit is entertainment. And therefore, no improvement findings needed to be made to address and maintain scenic quality on the roadway unit.
Georgina, can you please pull up the site plan, the detailed site plan? I'd like Paul to point out where the additional trees would be. Maybe that site plan will help, or maybe it won't. That's looking up.
It's going to be page.
I think it's near the end of this set of plans.
Yeah, scroll down a couple of sheets. Let's go one more. Sorry, keep going.
We're getting
there. How about right there? So Andrew, on the right side of that sheet A-1, you can see the dashed line. It sort of outlines the construction site, the area of disturbance.
Below the road.
To the left of the road.
Yep.
And then just immediately below that larger dashed box is a smaller dashed box, which is the location of the monopine. And so that stippled area to the right is the compact dirt roadway. And so the idea is to put the five trees along the edge, the western edge of that stippled area, in a linear fashion, again, to help screen that road cut that's located immediately. You can just leave it right there, yeah. Immediately to the east of the edge of that stippled area.
You want to point at that? Can you point at that?
Sure, I can point at that.
I think I follow you.
So the idea, Andrew, is that the view shared from a roadway unit and the shoreline unit is up this way. Just forgive this graphic. This is kind of two graphics in one. State Highway 28 is here, and Lakeshore Boulevard sort of comes in right through here. The lake is out this way.
Okay.
So the idea is that from the lake primarily, because from the roadway, you really can't see. You might be able to see the very top of the monopine, but it's really from the lake. And so if you were to put the trees in this area here, and if the project is approved, we will work with the applicant to make sure it's sited well. As you're looking up, those trees will block the cut slope that is located in this location here. This cut slope, it extends down quite a ways. We felt the five trees was reasonable for the project of this scale to provide an incremental increase to helping improve the scenic sort of view shift.
Okay. So we've got the tower to the south.
Tower, equipment shed. Access.
That's a set of steps.
Yep. And this right here is just a designated sort of base area for vehicles accessing this. There's gated access up here.
Okay.
It's only pedestrian access except for the property owners, emergency equipment, and people who will have a lease, basically. But there's nothing that needs to be done here. This is just a lease area.
It's identified as a lease area.
Yeah, on the ground, I've looked at it. It's where you would logically park.
And what are the stairs made of?
The stairs, I believe, are made out of wood or metal.
Pressure-treated lumber.
Okay, pressure-treated lumber. But it steps down. There's essentially a foundation because it's fairly steep here.
Right.
So.
Right, access is going to be necessary if you're going to have the equipment there.
Yeah.
Okay. No, very good. Thank you, Paul. Sure. Thanks for pointing that out. I wasn't quite sure where the additional trees would
be. Yeah, right here. Pressure treated lumber.
And the condition is that and a condition in the permit about the trees.
Yes.
The additional trees.
Yep.
All right, very good. Okay, I don't have any more questions for Paul. Representing the applicant?
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Any remarks?
We comments? Took a short presentation for you. Pull that up. So my name is Melissa Bio, so that's a wireless representing Verizon Wireless who filed this application for the new proposed facility in Ponderosa Ranch in Glen Village area. In addition to myself, I have some team members on the line, Erickson Milana, who's the Verizon Wireless radio frequency design engineer, Dave Kaiser with Waterford Consultants, who produced the report to show that we're within FCC compliance of radio frequency exposure guidelines, Don Carmichael, who is our consultant, or photo simulation consultant that did the simulations for the project, as well as Paul Albertin, who's outside counsel for Verizon Wireless. Project timeline, in early of 2017, RF engineers identified a significant gap in service coverage in the Incline Village area. Verizon Wireless then reviewed alternative locations, left at the proposed site, and mid-2018, we completed a proposed design. Verizon Wireless filed an application with Washoe County in April 2019, and the County Board of Supervisors approved that facility in June 2020. After that, we prepared additional materials for an application with TRPA and filed in March of this year. And August 4th, we had a continuance of a hearing so that we can meet with local residents last Friday, August 12th. To answer some questions that come up and take photographs from the property to prepare simulations. This slide shows a significant gap in Verizon Wireless coverage and network capacity in Eastern Incline Village area. This is because the existing Verizon Wireless facility at Incline Village is too distant, meaning 2.7 miles northwest.
And where is that?
It is indicated. You see the red outline, it's in the upper left-hand corner.
Do you know where that is on the ground?
On the ground, it's...
Is it the sheriff's facility?
No, it's called Incline Village Facility.
DOT facility on Melrose Highway? No,
I can't remember the cross streets off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't tell the scale of that map.
Yeah.
It's at the sanitation yard? No.
It actually might be right next to the 7-Eleven station, yeah, embedded within like that right building. Yeah. That was approved a couple years ago.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so it's by Cheese Rotisserie.
Got it.
They yep. burned down.
Yep.
Again.
So the top map just kind of outlines the Mill Creek and Ponderosa Ranch neighborhoods in red. And as you can see, there's no reliable in-building coverage to the residential or commercial areas. That area also lacks any vehicle coverage along Highway 28 and other roadways, including Lakeshore Boulevard. The service gap affects residents, workers, visitors, emergency personnel, and the Tahoe Prosperity Center estimates 15 million people visit Lake Tahoe area annually. On August 4th, the Tahoe Transportation District sent a letter encouraging TRPA to make a wireless connectivity a priority, and along by increasing public safety along Highway 28.
And Melissa, the three colors on the map, I can't quite read the legend there, but can you explain those, please?
So green is indicating that there's adequate coverage in building, so within like a building like where we're at right now. Yellow indicates in vehicle, so on the roadways, if you're in your car, having to make a call.
Adequate
coverage, adequate. Yes. And then the kind of gray color, and Erickson Milana is on the line, should I be butchering this at all, the outdoor is indicated in gray. So you have to be outside of a building, outside of your vehicle, and it's a limited coverage. It's not reliable. And so with the proposed facility, the lower map shows how the new facility will provide reliable in-building coverage as well as in-vehicle coverage in those areas. You kind of see how the color
less gray changes. More yeah. yellow and yeah. more green.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that will be like 5.8 square miles in a total of 3,230 residents, as well as businesses and visitors. So that will cover a lot. And with this location being on such a higher topographic rise above Highway 28, we can reach all those objectives with only a 45-foot tower on a pipe. It's a good location. Next slide, please. Unless you have any more questions. So this slide just shows the increase in demand in our local networks as capacity, and it can lead to low data speeds. This chart shows how the increased use of Horizon Wireless's data channels causes a corresponding drop in data throughput. High demand during the weekends and holidays exhausts the resources to the existing facility in Klein Village, the one that you guys kind of called out where the location was. The red line shows the channel occupancy. When it flatlines, users will be unable to access the network or make phone calls. And that, you know, with holidays and just, you know, weekends, that happens quite often, especially in this area where the gray, you know, showed only outdoor coverage. So that's when the capacity becomes an issue. So this new facility will definitely help that. Next slide, please. When researching the best location for this facility, Verizon Wireless considers many different factors. This map shows 20 different alternatives that were reviewed, including co-locations on existing wireless facilities, as well as public utility facilities. Other locations were discounted because they could not serve the significant gap, lacked a willing landlord, or had more of a visual or environmental impact. Next slide. The reasons for the alternatives being discounted are all listed on this chart. Most of the alternatives could not serve the significant gap in coverage. Several alternatives, as I mentioned, did not have a willing landlord, and one of which was the large Ponderosa Ranch property.
I would have expected to see more of those sites not in the cannot fill service gap.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on the local neighborhood, so to speak.
Yeah. Next slide, please. We met with one of the residents, Ms. Bach, who raised two alternatives to the south, which was the U.S. Forest Service property as well as the Lake Tahoe Nevada State Park. We actually did review those alternatives in our alternatives analysis. Both those locations were determined to be infeasible just due to the lack in service coverage because they were too far south. This signal will be blocked by a hill to the north where our proposed facility actually is located. So in comparison in these maps, you can see how the facilities to the south would leave a gap in the in-building coverage, including residential and business areas along Highway 28. And that's kind of how in the previous map that we showed, it was all almost completely, above the top map shows almost completely yellow and green, and the bottom two locations in red, you know, have a lot of the gray kind of located to it. And we do have Erickson Milana on the line should you have any more specific questions about service area and coverage gaps. Next slide, please. The proposed facility will comply with FCC compliance limits with frequency exposure as confirmed by Waterford consultants. And Dave Kaiser is on the line with Waterford. If you have any specific questions about that. Next slide. The location of the facility will pose a minimal view impact. I'm sorry, go back one. Thank you. East of the highway, the closest offsite residence.
Oh. One more.
Oh. Did I skip
there
one?
There you go.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. Go back one, please. So our facility is camouflage. It's a monopine. It will be 45 feet tall. And the design is concealed with the panel antennas. Has little visual impact as it will be placed along a row of existing evergreen trees of a similar height. In addition, our network equipment will be concealed in a small shelter designed to resemble a log cabin. Next slide. The location of the facility will pose a minimal impact. It's east of the highway. The closest resident is off-site at Joyce Bach's home, about 375 feet southeast and 105 feet greater in elevation. The proposed facility will not impact the Beaver Lake due to a combination of the distance, elevation difference, and existing vegetation off slope. Here are some photo simulations. I know Paul ran through a few of them, but this is a simulation from the southeast of Lakeshore Boulevard. You can see the monoplane blends really well with the established trees that cover the area above the cliff. And the next slide, it's a view from Highway 28 where it approaches Incline Village. The same trees block the view of the monopine. In the next slide, it shows the monopine looking east. Oh, back one more. There you go. It shows the monopine looking east from the Lake Tahoe shore. Again, it poses little impact because it's located partway up the slope and is covered by trees. Next slide. This is a view from the nearby trail. The base of the monopine is on the downslope, so it's shorter than the nearby trees. Next slide. We did three additional photo simulations after our meeting last Friday with Ms. Bach. Don Carmichael placed a 45-foot story pole to simulate the proposed facility. So, and we took additional photos for property and to create some additional simulations. This is a map that shows where our site is in relation to the additional photo simulations. And Mr. Carmichael is on the line if you have additional questions. Next slide, please. This is a view from the west of the location partway up the access road to the Bach residence. The home site is uphill and just behind this vantage point. In the next slide, this is a view from Ms. Fox pool deck on the north side of her residence. The inset photo is the top of the story pole, and it's marked by a beach ball. And you can see it's really obscured by the trees. And the next slide is a view looking west from the south side of Ms. Fox deck. The story pole is fairly visible through the vegetation downslope. And finally, you know, in conclusion, Verizon Wireless has designed this facility to fill a significant gap in network coverage in Incline Village with minimal visual impacts. As mentioned, there's been letters of support from the Tahoe Transportation District, as well as Tahoe Prosperity Center, both supporting the improved wireless service to enhance public safety. We ask that you approve the proposed facility. And I'm available for additional questions, as well as my team members are on the line. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Fios. And Paul, do we have the Prosperity Center's letter in our record?
I don't know.
That was addressed to Verizon or Epic, or if it was addressed to us at the TRPA?
I think it was one of the ones I sent.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. And this is for our staff. Can you please remind us of what our decision space is with respect to the radio frequency exposure issue and the FCC's role versus the TRPA's role? I know that's an important issue in many of these.
Yep. Prosperity Center letter is a part of the record.
Okay.
So the FCC, so Artists in Space, the TRPA, is related to the environmental threshold carrying capacities, consistency with the code, consistency with the regional plan. And then also in consideration of the facts that are needed to make the special use findings. So those deal with neighborhood compatibility, size, scope, and scale, ensuring that it doesn't detract from people's ability to enjoy their properties. That's language right out of the special use findings. So biological resources, scenic quality, water quality, air quality, things like that. We do not, and the FCC, I'm sure there's people on the phone who could correct me, but our decision space basically requires that we ensure the exposure levels, the radio frequency exposure levels, are within the FCC guidelines. And so if those exposure levels are below the allowed exposure levels as permitted by the FCC, then we have no ability to recommend anything but approval from a public health and safety standpoint, because the studies have shown, federal government has concluded, and it's reflected in federal legislation, that local jurisdictions cannot deny cell phone projects based on public health and safety, public exposure, if it's within the FCC guidelines. And that's a way to ensure that the industry is able to, build the infrastructure across the country that's needed for a number of reasons, particularly public service, public safety, fire, police, all that stuff. So we do not, in regard to public health, have a ability to recommend anything other than approval if it meets the standards.
And had the SEC taken action on this particular application relative to the point you just made or the issue you just described, determine that it's within their guidelines?
Yes, the report that was submitted confirms that it's well within the exposure. I think it's a quarter of the 25% of the allowable exposure. I can confirm that, but...
This is Dave Kaiser. I can speak to that if you'd like.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Kaiser.
So a few things. Yes, it is well within the limits. I would like to bring up that the limits themselves have a factor of safety of 50 involved. What we found with our theoretical study was that the equipment at its maximum capable power and transmit cycle would only be 60% of the limits, and that's in very close proximity to the tower at the base. The closest residence or building at the time we did the study, I believe, is no longer there, but that was found to be only 2%. I'd like to remind everyone that these power levels and so forth fall off in an exponential manner. So the further you get away, the factor drops off by a square. So it very quickly drops. But a quick summary is there's a factor of safety of 50, which means anything below the limits is safe for continuous exposure. And it's less than 60 or right around 60% is a very conservative estimate close to the tower.
And Mr. Kaiser, does the FCC issue to you or to your client a specific approval? Do they take an affirmative action?
Yeah, so as long as we certify that our study is performed according to the OET, Office of Engineering, Bulletin Number 65, that it's certified. I myself am a professional engineer in the state of California. So my certification that our study meets the FCC's certification for the analysis is what's required for approval.
Thank you. And question for Ms. Vios or others on her team. I know that it's come up recently within the Tahoe Basin on other applications for cell towers that are disguised or camouflaged, as you put it, as pine trees or some natural feature. Mm-hmm. What happens to the plastic that's involved, the microplastics? They, I presume, can get off the branches. They can end up in the environment, and they end up, we know from our other scientific research and studies basin-wide, that the microplastics are definitely not a positive contributor to lake and lake water quality. What's the industry in general? How's the industry responding to this issue? Can you talk about that?
Hi, this is Paul Albert, an outside counsel for Verizon. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Albert.
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon, Hearing Officer Strain. Thank you for hearing our application. Obviously, Verizon Wireless, this is a recent issue that has come up in the Tahoe Basin, and Verizon Wireless has taken it very seriously. And we submitted an independent study by a group called Integral Solutions that was submitted with respect to one of our other applications. And one of the things they found is that the microplastics that are found in the lake and elsewhere are generally not the PVC plastics that you find on the cell towers. The greatest contributor you probably know is plastic from tires and then other plastics, plastic bags, and curiously, the friable plastic that comes off of clothing and linens when it's washed and dried and so forth. Nevertheless, Verizon Wireless has agreed to a condition of approval that's part of this permit approval that every spring after the snow falls and every fall before the snow arrives, Verizon Wireless is obligated to collect any debris from the cell tower, any branches or needles or other, and dispose of it properly. And that's, we'll be doing that twice a year throughout the term of this facility's presence. But as I said, the shorter tower certainly has less plastic, but in addition, it hasn't been found to be one of the principal sources of microplastic pollution in the lake or anywhere else.
And you mentioned that is a condition, Paul. We have that as one of our draft permit conditions.
Sorry, I can't enumerate it, but yes, it is a condition of approval.
It's one that's condition six. Okay. And condition six.
That's it. Thank you.
And we're continuing to explore that issue with broadly and with TRPA.
Good. I would commend to you as a representative of the industry to get out in front of something like that. It's the ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure still holds true.
Yeah, Andrew, I appreciate you bringing that up as staff. I've been involved in these monopines for a long time. Our compliance staff recently went out the field with hot water quality control boards to look at some of these sites that have been recently constructed and some of those that have been in place for 10 years. And there is debris that is visible. There's actually in the last month, there's been a crane out on Pioneer Trail repairing that large monopine out there and replacing a huge pile of limbs.
Yes.
You can see them. They're stacked up right there. They've been installing them for months or for at least a month on and off. And so I guess my point is that, and I appreciate Mr. Albritton acknowledging that this is a growing issue. And even though there isn't a direct link to microplastics entering the lake, just empirically looking at those sites, there's plastics on the ground. And I know that the Desert Research Institute is trying to find money to do their own study to see if there is a connection. But regardless, I think the agency is very interested in working with the industry, similar to what we did with getting two-stroke engines off of the lake. TRPA was at the forefront of dealing with that pollution issue.
Nationwide.
And nationwide. And the industry stepped up and found solutions and it all sort of became a model for that. And so as staff, I'm available to discuss and evaluate alternatives that we can use here in Tahoe. There was one example I saw at a golf course in Carmel where they actually developed it was a tree, but it was a snag. So it was a dead tree that was devoid of vegetation except for the branches. And it was very appealing from a visual standpoint. Now, from a technological standpoint, I don't know what the limitations are, but it is a growing issue and I appreciate them recognizing that. We talked about it with this project, but this is on private property and the private property owner was very adamant that they wanted a monopine. So it would not detract from the character of their property. So in the future, staff will be asking one of the questions, not only in terms of an alternative site analysis, but an alternative design analysis. Can it be embedded within a building? I'm working on one on the North Shore where it's going to be embedded within a church bell tower.
See that.
And thank you for acknowledging that. We look forward to working with the industry in the future to find a better approach.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, that issue is certainly on our radar, and it is commendable for everyone involved, both the regulator as well as the regulated community, to address the needs that have arisen particularly over the last 20 or 25 years, and how these cell towers can evolve into landscape elements that aren't necessarily understood or necessarily seen what they are by the average observer. That sometimes you really have to look or know what you're looking for in order to find it. It's come a long way in a short period of time, and we certainly don't want this issue of shedding needles, which happens in the natural world, to become an unintended consequence as part of the trying to do the right thing. Good point. I don't have any further questions for the staff or for the applicant. I'd like to open the public hearing at this point and ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for anyone who would like to provide public comment on this item. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature in the Zoom app located on the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now. I will announce and unmute you, and you have 3 minutes. We have a minute here to see if any hands go up. It looks like we don't have any public comments.
Thank you, Georgina. Anyone in the room here wants to offer public comment on this item? All right, seeing none. And I think, Paul, thank you for passing along some correspondence with the neighbors, the affected neighbors, Mr. Geddes and Ms. Bach. I did see that. I don't know if that's official public comment or not.
It is. Oh, the email.
The email where they responded and thanked you, and I think Verizon for going the extra mile, so to speak, to listen and seriously address, take into account their concerns.
I will make it part of the public record. Yep, thank you.
That probably is appropriate at this point, unless our staff or our attorney feel otherwise, we'd include that as part of the public record.
Yeah, I'll do that right now.
And Paul, can you please, one last time, summarize what, if any, changes you are recommending, either in the staff report, in the findings, or in the draft permit conditions?
Yeah. So, in response to the public comments, in response to the site visit that we performed last week, I am recommending the one additional condition, which would be condition 22, which again states that future increases in height and width of the monopine structure is prohibited in perpetuity to avoid impacts to TRP scene and quality threshold ratings and views from the adjacent properties. And that is the only change.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. I have that one noted. We have closed the public hearing. I will now take action on the project, including the change that Paul has just given us for the draft permit itself. I will approve the Tunnel Creek Properties new cellular monopine tower as it has been proposed, based on the findings that are in our staff report, and that includes a FONSI, finding of no significant effect. And in particular, the chapter 21, which are the special use findings, as Paul noted, chapter 37, which are the height ordinance findings, and chapter 50, the additional public service facility findings, based on the rationale that is presented with each of those findings. Further, I will approve the permit, including the draft conditions, as Paul has amended them for us by adding condition number 22 that we've looked at here together at the hearing. And with that, I believe we have taken the steps necessary to approve this project. Thank you all for your participation in this and helping to educate members of the public, as well as those in the room, on the details that go into a facility like this and how far it's come over the years. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And with that, that concludes our public hearing items. We move on to item 6, adjournment. I'll adjourn the meeting and thank everyone who's been on the phone, participating remotely and in person, for their time today. We appreciate it. We'll stand adjourned.